This podcast is shared for the purposes of information only. The discussion does not reflect a direct or implied endorsement by Municipal World or its members.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. From Municipal World, I'm Susan Gardner. This is the MW Shares podcast, where we share your stories, providing insights into the challenges and opportunities facing local governments and communities just like yours. Now, we talked a lot in the last segment about some of the similarities and differences between the public and private sector, and you shared some excellent ideas about how municipalities can pivot their thinking to take advantage of some of those lessons from the private sector. Can you offer some suggestions now on tools that are used in the private sector that may not be widely adopted in the municipal sector, but that could benefit municipalities and local governments?
Yeah, I have a couple of suggestions, Susan, and one I want to take from when I was leading development teams in the building of software in the technology sector. And in that sector, they really focused on agile development methods, which really is the frequent redesign rather than total and complete high-level design of whatever you're going to roll out, which tends to be the practice in the municipal sector. The agile method of project management is really used, especially for software development, and it's characterized by dividing the tasks into short phases of work we call sprints, and the frequent reassessment of those short tasks in the sprints, and then adapting the plans as you move along. And in the private sector, we would work from what's called a minimal viable product, which would be get something out there, base features, try to get it up and running quickly, and then we would add features through the agile process. And I think municipalities can benefit from agile development of products and services by using collaboration, sprints, and minimal viable products. I think cities and towns who acquire attributes of agile organizations, it will allow the municipality to rapidly adapt to the changing dynamics, including citizen demands, and offer value-added services to residents quickly. So rather than waiting years for rolling out a complete solutions with all the features built in, sometimes at that point, it's even outdated or behind. Mm-hmm. Development really allows municipalities to provide services quickly and add features over time to remain current.
And some of this this agile work, I think, is maybe something that we've seen reflected in the work municipalities have done to bring things online during COVID, kind of working from that basic foundation of what do we need to do to get the requirements right now and let's build on it into the future.
Yeah, I think it's a great example. We've been challenged during the crisis to respond quickly and figure out the other pieces later. And that's a great example of how agile development can really help.
And certainly it shows how municipalities can use this kind of agile project management approach to respond quickly to customer demands. Now, a lot of innovative municipal leaders are looking to the private sector, of course, for inspiration, and the recent implementation of customer relation management systems, or CRMs, which you just referenced earlier. This seems to be a bit of a trend. What kind of advantages or opportunities do you think CRMs present for municipalities?
Well, Susan, there are municipalities that have implemented CRMs very effectively. I don't think it's as widespread as in the private sector, but CRMs are becoming mission critical for businesses to be able to manage their customers and to be able to manage those interactions. And the CRM really is a digital database of customers with the ability to track in a very granular way details like purchase history, service interactions, marketing campaigns. And private businesses have been seeing gains from CRM software in everything from sales numbers to customer engagement. And now municipalities, I would encourage municipal leaders to embrace CRM technology and to use it to better engage with their constituents on multiple levels. And some examples would be Salesforce or Microsoft Dynamics. They have centralized customer data for easy access and streamlining the communication process by enabling emails on an individual or an automated basis. CRMs allow innovation in municipalities and have the potential to move us towards a more citizen-centric way of operating. And I think during the pandemic, actually, the provincial government on some of the information around vaccinations and stuff is actually using a Salesforce back-end product. So I think there are a lot of applications, but tons of opportunities for municipalities to dig deeper with their customers using a CRM.
So I suspect we're going to see more municipalities adopting CRMs as this continues to gain acceptance. Are there other digital services strategies we see in the private sector that might also be a benefit for municipalities that really haven't had a lot of uptake yet?
Yeah, I think you touched on one, and that comes from the private sector kind of innovation that municipalities could pick up on. And it's around digital services, which I think first segment, we talked a little bit about customer service and being able to have digital services to help support our clients. And I think cities and towns can really improve citizen participation in public services by using digital services for all kinds of things like applications, documents, and other forms online. And digital forms and the services also improves accessibility to the services. Mobile is another area where municipalities can invest in their digital efforts. And just to give you an example, in China, there's wide adoption of an app called WeChat, and they actually offer services such as visa applications on the mobile messaging app.
I want to ask if that's secure.
as far as I know, it's very secure, yes. So digital innovations are a must for municipalities that want to improve their overall level of service to the public. For example, contactless payments. And as you know, during the pandemic, people haven't been paying by cash. They probably won't in the future. We've kind of moved away from that. And people are now paying using their phone or even a card. And that's kind of the direction things are going. I think one of the challenges municipalities face is too many of our software platforms that we are using now don't sync or connect with one. And I think municipalities need to work hard at integrating platforms because it will really benefit and improve our customer service and user experience.
Well, it's certainly another good example of lessons from the private sector. Process automation is another trend that we've seen a lot of in the private sector. Do you have any thoughts on automation and what that can mean for municipalities?
Susan, you just keep asking me great questions. I think automation of processes is a critical thing. I think if there's one problem that's really plagued municipalities over time, it's been the time-consuming paper-based processes, whether it's tax bills or summer camp applications. I think government can take a look at how the private sector is using technology to automate various processes and apply similar practices to their own department. I think the bottom line is that process automations will save time, money, and resources. And I think those automation processes are done manually, and I think there's an opportunity for savings, but also better customer service, as Gary Vee said earlier, less friction. And here's a bit of a challenge. I think it's time for environmentally cautious municipalities to remove the photocopiers and go paperless. And I challenge municipalities to transform into a paperless office with paperless employees. I've been working at that for the last year and have pretty much gotten away from using any paper at all. and signing most things online.
Wow. Well, that's an accomplishment, and that's exciting. It's I know the paperless office has been something that has been a goal, but kind of the holy grail for many organizations for a long time. So it's good to hear that there are some indications that it could indeed be possible. Now, there's certainly, you've highlighted a lot of great opportunities and gains for municipalities when it comes to, you know, these different tools and technologies. Hand in hand with the technology, though, and, you know, I kind of tongue-in-cheek asked about the security of that app in China that lets you process your visa applications. But the truth is, there is a growing trend of cyber attacks and holding towns to ransom for access to their systems and information. What can municipalities learn from the private sector experience in that regard?
Susan, another great question, because I think the security of data is absolutely critical, especially in government, because of such sensitivity around it. And it's an area where officials in the municipality can certainly learn from the innovations in the private sector to try and enhance safeguards against hackers and cyber criminals. The private sector innovations really are aimed at helping and municipalities with securing data in a few critical areas. So those applications from the private sector, many municipalities are already adopting, but I think more needs to be done. And there are kind of three areas. One would be internal threats, you know, that might lead to leaks, thinking of the Edward Snowden, that's kind of the most popular one. The other one would be to guard against malicious individuals looking to try to steal employee information, hack networks. And then finally, I think municipalities' cyber defenses are, we need to look for standards and regulations that are evolving internationally and look for those as lessons to be able to make adjustments to how we securitize data in the municipal sector.
Now we're going to take a short break before getting into the rest of the conversation with Rob Adams. Municipal World is delighted to announce its first ever children's book on local government, Tucker Goes to City Hall. Written by local government legend George Cuff and his daughter Jill Lewis, this easy-to-read chapter book is a great tool for learning, both in and outside the classroom. Get it now to share with your own children or for your local library, and recommend it to your local school board too. Visit books.municipalworld.com and grab your copy today. Yeah, certainly the cyber attacks, we've seen so many of them. They've heightened the importance of municipal data security. Another area worth discussing is measuring data and analytics. Do you have any thoughts on the application of data and analytics to local government?
Yeah, I think there's some real gains here. And I have seen municipalities that are really embracing this. So I have seen some success in the sector, but the private sector has many lessons to share with municipalities around the use of data and data analytics. And I think we need to invest in training and tools to empower employees to be able to easily see data, be able to analyze it, to find insights from it, and to do work on finding new opportunities and using the data to refine our programs. I think towns and cities really should be encouraging data analysis in all their measuring of results, budgeting, status reporting, project scoping. I think data analysis should be basically embedded into municipal government culture. And in some cases, municipalities don't have anyone assigned this responsibility or looking at it. And I think obviously these will be very large hurdles for many cities and towns to overcome. But I think driving forward, we can certainly enhance our constituent reach and effectiveness as well as encouraging innovation from within if we embrace these things. A great book on the subject of measuring payback, ROI, risk tolerance, speed to adopt, and all these kinds of things is Measure What Matters by John Doerr. And I would recommend it to anyone who's interested in doing more around measuring data and data analysis.
Earlier, you mentioned the importance of having, you know, roles in the organization devoted to innovation roles where that's actually included as part of the person's title. I've heard some folks say that organizations now, municipalities even, should have people in the organization that this is their role, data and data analysis. Do you think that's true?
I very strongly agree with you, Susan. Just to give an example, in Stouffville, we're trying to do a lot around innovation. We have an innovation committee, and I'm certainly involved in innovation and trying to establish KPIs and use data. But one of the challenges we have that all the folks who are on our committee have is that we all have other jobs we're trying to do. Yes. And so we get spread thin. And so I think some municipalities have been very successful at bringing on people who are really focused on these tasks that have expertise. I know one of the leaders, Dana, up at the city of Barrie, who actually got Mike, the Mike group started, mm-hmm. very, very effective. That would be an example of success. And I think our councils can really learn from that. That these innovations actually drive better results, whether it's better customer service or savings in real dollars, that spending time and making the investments in people in innovation roles and in data management roles really pays dividends down the road.
Okay, now this kind of leads into the next segment we're going to talk about. The fit with plans, operational plans, strategic plans, performance review plans. These are things that are driving documents, driving forces in municipalities. Are there any differences with your experience you've seen in the private sector?
Yes, yeah, Susan, there are some real differences, and I've done a lot of strategic planning. I learned an awful lot when I did my MPA at Western. I actually wrote some papers on strategic planning. So I know a lot about strategic planning, and I've actually led a number of strategic plans and written some strategic plans. But I think the interesting thing is that in the private sector, they use tools that are similar, but sometimes they come at it a different way. For example, Blue Ocean Strategy, which is a book on how to do innovation and to build strategic plans, comes at things in a totally different way. So I think municipal sector folks, leaders, and councils could look to books like Blue Ocean Strategy as an example. But another one that's really very interesting and recently has become a new buzz is OKRs. And it's a buzzword among many businesses around the world. You probably don't know it, but companies like Google, Slack, Netflix and Amazon are using OKRs to supercharge and streamline their workforce and drive results. And OKRs are really objectives and key results. OKRs really comprise an objective, a clear thing that you want to achieve, and then a clearly defined goal and 3 to 4 or 5 key results that are specific measures used to track the achievement of that goal.
Now, question, Rob, if I can just interject there. OKRs, yes, it's a new term to me for sure, and I'm eager to learn more about that. How is objectives and key results, how is that different from KPIs, which many municipalities will be familiar with, key performance indicators, part of much of their reporting?
Yeah, good question, Susan. OKRs are really focused on the objective and the key results. the KPIs is really the measurement of that and presenting the data that's gathered on it. And so it is related, but it's more focused on what's the data that you're getting from it to show the achievement of it. So KPIs could certainly reflect the results of a OKR.
This has a much stronger tie to the goals.
Yeah. And a simpler one. And so really the goal of an OKR is to define how to achieve the exact objective through very concrete, specific, and measurable actions. And the OKRs tend to be shared across the organization with the intent of providing teams visibility of the goals and with the intention of alignment and focus of energy. So OKRs are typically set at a company level, a team level, and a personal level to make sure that there's congruency or connection between all of them. And as a result, OKRs, the benefit are they're very focused, they really align the organization, and they really engage everyone in the organization. And so if you were to start planning out or writing your OKR, Susan, you'd need to kind of keep these two questions in mind. What do you want to accomplish? And the answer to this will be your objective. And how are you going to achieve this? And that answer will give you your key results. And so if people want to learn more about OKRs, there's some good success stories in an excellent book I mentioned earlier, Measure What Matters by John Doerr, which is an excellent place to start. And I guess I just want to say that, firstly, try to set a lofty objective that doesn't contain a specific numeric goal. And then try to set key results that, if achieved in the end, we also achieve the objective. And many organizations use some kind of performance management system to understand progress towards goals. But I think municipalities can take the example of some of these tech sector companies that are using OKRs and more data to drive decisions and improve results.
Fantastic. So what are some of the significant areas where the public sector and the municipal sector specifically differs from the private sector is in the area of human resources? Do you have some lessons from the private sector that would benefit municipalities?
Yeah, I have some really good examples, and I think we're encountering some of them now. I know we have a lot of interesting conversations in Stouffville. We have a very progressive HR department, and our manager who leads it actually has lots of experience from the private sector as well. So she's very progressive. And I think the new work from home phenomenon driven by COVID, well, it's new to the public sector. For the private sector, they've been operating this way for decades. In fact, Susan, I have a friend who worked for HP for 25 years, and she worked from her home the entire time.
Wow.
Yeah. I have another friend who works for a company. He's a senior executive, and they have 3,000 employees globally, and they have no offices. It's a virtual company. So sometimes I joke and say, I want to be the first virtual municipality.
Wow.
And so top employers like Google, Facebook, Apple, Salesforce, Microsoft have already adopted work from home practices as they kind of continue to embrace the work from home phenomenon. But here's where it's really important to understand the power of it. A recent survey that I was reading indicated that 37% of employees who've been working from home during the pandemic will actually quit their job rather than return to the office and their daily commute every day.
Wow.
If they can come back, maybe not at all or 2 days a week, they'll be satisfied. But if not, I think people are saying, hey, I really value home life. I really value not having that long commute. And I'm going to try to find another opportunity. And so I think in the municipal sector, you know, we have a war for talent going on. We have a lot of senior people in the municipal sector are retiring. and there just aren't enough people to fill the spots. So I think progressive municipalities have already made the investment during the pandemic in the technology and platforms and tools to allow people to work from home. And I think in the war for talent, municipalities need to follow the private sector lead and have home-based offices if they want to be able to recruit and retain top talent in their organization.
Yeah.
The other thing, Susan, which we don't often talk about is employee incentives, like work from home, but also performance bonuses. And I think the municipal sector, although it's always a little trickier to work with performance bonuses, I think that's something that municipalities should look to be able to drive key results. And so I kind of say to my municipal colleagues out there, imagine a virtual municipality. Who will be the first to actually make it happen? I know it's going to happen one day.
Well, if there's a race, I think you'll be in it, Rob.
I don't know about that, Susan, but it's worth putting out these ideas. I think we need to step outside our paradigm and think differently about things sometimes.
Well, you've covered a lot of ground here with me, and you've got some terrific lessons for municipalities in all this that you've gleaned from your experience in the private sector. How would you summarize the takeaways for listeners as we wrap up?
Well, Susan, first of all, I think I need to just repeat it again. Municipalities are doing a lot of amazing things. They really are. And the level of collaboration is incredible. And many municipalities are already adopting the learnings from the private sector as they lead their organizations in the future of what municipalities will be. But if I was to try to really focus our conversation and summarize it, I'd say municipalities who embrace risk, hire innovative leaders, leverage agile project development, implement CRMs, digitize services, automate processes, and measure data are destined for success. I think the key lessons that cities and towns can learn from the private sector can go a long way to creating a more seamless, engaging, and citizen-centric customer experience all around. And I think progressive municipalities that leverage the human resource learnings from the private sector, like work from home and incentive-based payment structures, will win the war for talent. And finally, Susan, I think despite all the lessons learned from the private sector that we've discussed today, the private sector can learn a lot from the wonderful work happening in municipalities. But I think that's for another podcast.
And that sounds like a promise. Well, thank you, Rob. That's that is a great summary, and it's been a great conversation. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you and tapping into some of those insights that you bring from your very diverse and interesting background. So, really appreciate the opportunity and that you've taken the time to chat with us.
Well, thanks, Susan. I always enjoy speaking with you, and I always enjoy listening to my favorite podcast. I go for a walk and think about municipal issues, and I listen to Municipal World Shares. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, as always. Look forward to chatting again soon.
We'd like to hear your ideas. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered in a future episode, simply drop us an email at stories@municipalworld.com. Also, don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe. I'm Susan Gardner for Municipal World, and we'll be back with more stories next week.